Whispering Streets. And here is Betty Davis.
Hello. Claire Abbott sat in the doctor's private office, her pretty face looking pale and pinched, her eyes wide and beseeching and frightened. She was trying to explain her problem clearly and concisely, but her lips trembled.
My mind, Dr. Denton, I'm losing it. Perhaps I should have an operation. Perhaps there's a pressure on my brain. Maybe that's why I'm behaving the way I am.
Well, just how are you behaving?
Well, I do unexplainable things.
Such as?
Well, I make engagements without knowing that I've made them. I put things down and they vanish into thin air, even though I haven't left the room. I make long phone calls and forget what I said an hour later.
Mm-hmm. You told me just a minute ago that you'd recently lost your husband. I think that might account for your forgetfulness. You were devoted to your husband.
I worshipped the ground he walked on. But that's no excuse for my behavior. Brett was ill for a long while. I had a great deal on my mind, but I didn't crack up the way I have recently.
Well, I think you're exaggerating the situation. It's inevitable that a woman who's been under a long strain, taking care of a sick man, should have some sort of reaction.
I didn't take care of Brett. He had three nurses.
The shock of his death?
It was a heartbreak, Doctor, but it wasn't a shock. I'd known from the beginning that my husband couldn't get well. Indeed, as much as I loved him, I was glad for him when the end came. He suffered so dreadfully. There isn't any pressure on me, really. I live with my sister. She's kindness personified. With a servant who's been in the family for years and years. I have no financial worries. Brett left me his entire estate free and clear. I should be able to relax now that it's all over, but I can't relax. Not when I'm so unpredictable.
Perhaps you should visit a psychiatrist.
Well, I have been to two psychiatrists. They were recommended by my sister. But I didn't get any help. I'm here as a last resort.
How did you happen to come to me?
Oh, well, you operated on my sister years ago. She suggested that I come to you. Her name is Grace Abbott.
Oh, yes, I remember the case. She was a difficult patient. She had quite a bit of trouble with her nurses. I was constantly making changes. You say she's your sister?
Well, she's my sister-in-law, really, but she might just as well be my sister. She's ever so fond of me, and she's been a tower of strength all through Brett's illness. She adored Brett. She kept house for him until he married me.
Had you and your husband been married long when he was taken ill?
Only a year. I was his secretary before we were married.
Oh?
Any other woman than Grace might have thought I was some sort of a gold digger, a smart girl marrying a boss for his money, but Grace accepted me at face value. That's why I think she's so wonderful.
I quite understand. To go back to your problem, Mrs. Abbott.
To go back to my problem. I'm scared, Doctor. These horrible blanks I'm drawing every day. I may hurt somebody if I keep on the way I'm going. Even Grace agrees to that.
Even Grace agrees. I'll give you the name of a brain specialist, Mrs. Abbott. If your forgetfulness and preoccupation still bother you at the end of, say, another month, phone him and make an appointment.
I'll phone him the minute I get home. I haven't any time to waste. This morning, I went for a walk in the park. And when I came in, Grace told me that I'd had a call from an old friend, that I'd made an engagement to go to the theater with her last night and hadn't shown up. The friend said she'd waited in the lobby for over an hour, and that she'd never speak to me again. Dr. Denton, I can't remember making that engagement.
Did you call the friend to check on your sister-in-law's story?
I called to apologize. Not to check on Grace. The butler said very coldly that she was out of town. I didn't believe him.
I see. Look, Mrs. Abbott, I'll also write down the name of my lawyer, Mr. Briggs. Now, if the brain specialist finds nothing wrong with you, I wish you'd see him. And tell him your story just exactly as you've told it to me. I have a hunch there may be a wheel within a wheel.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again. But first...
Where do you go when you've been to the moon? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where's some adventure that's happening soon? Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's this I hear about the last frontier?
It's a wild new world, and Navy nuclear submariners are discovering it. Training, pay, and excitement that's something special. The Navy nuclear program. Call the Navy.
And now, back to our story with Betty Davis.
Claire Abbott walked home from Dr. Denton's office. She walked slowly. She was almost afraid to reach her destination. When she came into the house, Grace would be waiting for her, and she'd hear gently that she'd forgotten something else, that she'd lost something else, that she'd done something else, something stupid. She was shivering as she fitted her key into the lock of a grilled iron door and pushed it open and closed it quietly. But not quietly enough. For Grace, slim and stately and smiling, floated out of the drawing room.
You're back, Claire.
Yes, I'm back.
You saw Dr. Denton?
Yes, I did.
Was he helpful?
No. Dr. Denton said he wasn't a brain specialist. He couldn't do a thing.
I'm sorry I told you to go to him. Sorry I sent you on a fool's errand. Does he have any suggestions?
He gave me the name of a brain specialist. He said if I wasn't better in a month or so, to phone him and make an appointment. But I'm going to see him immediately if he has evening office hours.
Don't see him at all. It would just be another disappointment. Besides, darling, you couldn't see him this evening. There's a dinner party.
What dinner party?
There are six people for dinner.
I invited six people for dinner? Grace, it's impossible.
Oh, no, it isn't, dear. You phoned and asked them. It was, last Wednesday that you phoned them one after the other. I was in the room when you phoned. And later you planned the menu.
But I didn't. I know I didn't.
Oh, darling, Bridget will vouch for that. She went to the market today and ordered everything you wanted. A huge roast of beef and some vegetables. Bridget!
Yes, Miss Grace?
You ask her, Claire.
Bridget, are we having guests for dinner, truly?
Yes, ma'am. With you and Miss Grace, it'll be six guests.
It's too much. I couldn't have. What food did I order?
Roast and strawberries to serve with the ice.
No, 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 I don't believe it. I can't face six people. I don't even know who I invited. I don't know when I made the calls. I don't know anything.
Darling, darling, stop crying. You just go to your room and lie down. And I'll call everybody and tell them that you're indisposed.
I don't know what I'd do without you, Grace. I'd be lost.
You may go now, Bridget. Just cook the roast. My sister and I will eat it with the usual vegetables. We'll have the strawberries without ice cream.
Very well, Miss Grace.
I'm going mad. There's no doubt about it. Stark staring mad.
All right, in a little while, dear. Come upstairs with me, and I'll tuck you in and give you a sedative. When you've had some sleep, you'll feel much better. Much, much better. As I said, Claire, don't phone the brain specialist. You take a lot of tests and make a lot of foolish x-rays. It'll amount to nothing in the end.
Claire lying in bed thought, I couldn't have asked six people and forgotten them all. One, perhaps, but not six. And all at once she heard Dr. Denton's voice saying, a wheel within a wheel. There was a telephone on her bedside. Abruptly, she lifted the receiver and dialed a number and made an appointment for the next morning. She was replacing the receiver when a knock sounded on the door.
Come in.
Are you resting, Claire?
I haven't been asleep yet.
If only you'd take that sedative.
Well, I thought it might make me fuzzier, even more forgetful. But if you think I should...
I do. Open your mouth, dear. It's a good girl. I swallow what? Yeah. Hmm? You'll be off in no time, so.
You're so sweet to me, Grace. What was Bridget muttering about when she left the room? I mean, after I questioned
her... Bridget has her moods. Don't worry about the way she stews and mutters.
I'm drowsy already. No. I won't worry about anything. I'll just remember how happy I was. Married to Britt. Did you call off the dinner guest?
Indeed I did.
You never told me the names of the guests.
It doesn't matter, really. The whole thing belongs to yesterday's 7,000 years. Just go to sleep, Claire. Dream. Sweet dreams.
So Claire went to sleep, but she didn't dream at all. And when she waked, she felt strangely refreshed, for she'd made up her mind. And later that morning, she was entering the reception room of a prominent lawyer, and soon she was seated opposite him in his private office. He stared at her for a moment, and then...
Mrs. Abbott, Dr. Denton said that I should expect a call from you.
Oh, it was kind of him to warn you, Mr. Bracey.
Well, no, it wasn't a question of warning me. Thought you might need help. Now, you've been led to believe that you're losing your mind, haven't you, Mrs. Abbott?
Led to believe.
Dr. Denton said that you thought you'd forgotten various things. That you did unpredictable things, that you lost things. But don't we all? You know, I have a client at this very moment who's fighting for his life. And he remembers everything he did in detail on a certain night. Yet nobody believes him. Yeah, but that's another story. Now, Dr. Denton also told me that the woman you call your sister is really your sister-in-law. Tell me, what about the maid, Bridget, the family retainer?
Oh, Bridget worked for my husband and my husband's sister. Their mother before them. She's loyal to a fault.
I see. I'm glad you came here, Mrs. Abbott. I think I have something important to tell you.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back.
Do you know what is called the first American Constitution to create a government in the United States? It was called the Fundamental Orders and was written in Connecticut in 1639. A great deal of our election procedures today are based on the Fundamental Orders. For example, they stated that when a nation of people are joined together in peace and unity, they should have a decent and orderly government to handle their problems. The Fundamental Orders also established a method for voting. They directed that the people of each town would meet together at a set time and place to elect what they called deputies. These deputies attended general assemblies and voted on all laws and orders which would be for the public good, just like our representatives and senators do today. Yes, these early settlers in Connecticut added a most important page to your political history.
And now back to our story with Betty Davis.
Claire Abbott, her hands clasped
tightly, stared across the desk at the sharp-featured man who was her lawyer, and then she spoke slowly.
Mr. Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
Did Dr. Denton tell you about the theater engagement with an old friend?
Oh, yes, he did indeed. What was her name, Mrs. Adams?
Mona Brearley. My sister said that she'd never forgive me. Mona, I mean. And she was right. I called to apologize, and the Brearley butler said she was out of town. But he was fibbing.
Oh, no, he wasn't. Mona Brearley's a client of mine. She's been in Europe for the past 5 weeks. You didn't make a theater engagement with her. Not unless you made it over the transatlantic telephone.
But I must have. Grace said...
Forget about Grace. Oh, no, no. Now, don't forget about her. Grace fixed up that little deal as she fixed up many other deals. But she's been having a difficult time with Bridget the maid.
A difficult time with Bridget the maid?
Mm-hmm. She's been trying to make Bridget conform. You see, Bridget's torn between loyalty to the family, family in capital letters, Mrs. Adams, and to Brett Abbott's wife, whom she loves dearly.
I don't understand.
Oh, I think I can explain. Now, when you put things down and they disappear into thin air...
Yes?
Has it ever occurred to you that Grace always happens to walk through the room just before they disappear? And as for invitations and phone calls that you forget, well, it's her word against yours.
You really believe that Grace...
Mrs. Abbott, I'm expecting a new client. Will you go through that door to the left and relax in a comfortable chair and wait for 15 or 20 minutes while I interview my client?
If you say so.
The client was recommended to me by a certain Dr. Denton, who was brought to your attention by your sister-in-law. Your sister-in-law thought she was playing safe by reminding you of a doctor who'd worked miracles but was not the brain specialist. Rather odd, isn't it? Sometimes the best laid plans miscarry. Now, go through that door to the left, will you? And close it, but not entirely. Leave enough space so that you can hear what's said.
Like a submissive child, Claire Abbott rose from her place in front of the lawyer's desk and walked through the door to the left into a charming little room. She learned later that Mr. Briggs called it the client's nook. She dropped into an upholstered chair and relaxed, as ordered. Not thinking, not especially curious, just waiting for what came next. And suddenly she heard a door open and close, and then she heard the sound of voices.
Miss Abbott, I presume?
Yes, I'm Grace Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
I was recommended to you by
Dr. Clark Denton. Yes, I know. Clark's one of my best friends.
He's one of your best friends. Why wouldn't you see me sooner?
Oh, you see, I was waiting for a phone call. It came yesterday afternoon. I called you after I'd arranged for another interview. Well, what can I do for you, Miss Abbott?
I've come to you about my sister-in-law. Dr. Denton will tell you that she's been seen because of a mental disorder. Dr. Denton suggested that she go to a colleague of his, a brain specialist, but she's afraid to see a specialist. She's in a bad way. And I think it's my duty to protect her.
Your duty? Go on, Miss Adams.
My brother left his entire estate to his wife, who was his secretary.
Yes?
I was cut off entirely. If he hadn't married this secretary, his entire estate would have gone to me. That's not the point.
I quite understand. Go on, Miss Adams.
Well, since she's come into a large sum of money, my sister-in-law has lost her sense of proportion. I'm putting it very mildly, Mr. Briggs. And that's why I've come here to ask your advice. I want to be appointed her legal guardian.
I see. And what about Mrs. Abbott?
I'll see that she's comfortably cared for in some nursing home.
And you'll be safe, won't you, unless Bridget spills the beans. Oh, I do beg your pardon. Spills the beans is such a slangy expression.
I don't know what you're getting at.
The dinner party for six. It was just one fib too many for Bridget. You see, I was alerted by Dr. Denton. He said that while he was talking with your brother's wife, he had a hunch. He felt that something was wrong. That's why he advised both you and your sister-in-law to consult me. That's why I didn't make an appointment with you until this morning. I wanted to see her first.
You mean Claire?
Yes. I've seen her. I've also talked with Bridget. Now, if necessary, Bridget will testify against you, Miss Abbott. She'll tell about your plot against your sister-in-law. She'll testify that you tried to make Mrs. Abbott believe that she was losing her mind.
If Bridget does that, she'll be incriminating herself.
No, no.
She'll have a loophole. She can turn state's evidence. Take my advice, Miss Abbott, and fade out of the picture as quickly as possible. You've been playing for very high stakes, and unfortunately for you, you've lost.
Where will I go? What will I live on?
Well, you certainly don't deserve it. But I'm sure that Mrs. Abbott will see that her husband's sister doesn't starve. And now, if you'll excuse me, I must get back to a client in the other room.
Crimes go unpunished because they're listed as accidents. An enormous amount of mental torture is canceled out because the person who's being tortured is too kind and sympathetic to believe in circumstantial evidence. But sometimes circumstantial evidence can and does convict the innocent unless there's a Mr. Briggs in the offing. Mr. Briggs, the lawyer, was a keen man whose kindness and sympathy were channeled in one direction, toward his own personal gain.
And now here is Betty Davis to tell you more about Lawyer Briggs.
Mr. Briggs could pull rabbits out of hats. He could sway a jury by the turn of a phrase. You'll meet him when he does just that. This is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Street.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Kathy Lewis, Ed Prentice, Kay Stewart, and Bill Boucher. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Hugh Douglas.
Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.